This is the Wonder Life Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Ritter. Each week, I interview game changers, thought leaders, and functional health and wellness experts to inspire us to light up our lives so we can go out and light up this world. You may follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Wonder Health, and that is Wonder with a U.
Today on the Wonder Life podcast, Andrea sits down with Kim C. Self from Progressive Health and Wellness. They talk about intermittent fasting, the problem with a ketogenic diet, who that's going to benefit, and so much more. Enjoy this episode of the Wonder Life podcast.
Okay, great. So what is intermittent fasting? Like, what does that actually mean?
Intermittent fasting is the process of cycling between periods of eating and periods of not eating. So there's a few different ways of going about it. There's a few different kind of tours of intermittent fasting. The most common and the one that you'll see the most commonly referenced in research is the what we refer to as the 8-16 fast, in which you fast for 16 hours, largely overnight while you're sleeping, and then eat a full day's worth of calories. So, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, a couple snacks, within an 8-hour time period. So but then from there, there's
behind that, like, why is that something that can help you?
Intermittent fasting in general?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of research. What kind of started this whole the initiation of this trend, I should say, was looking into the research behind caloric restriction and fasting. But the fasting was done typically for longer, you know, 3 days at a minimum. And it's very consistent showing that caloric restriction, so reducing up to 40% of your caloric intake on a daily basis, and fasting elicits these healing and repair mechanisms within the cell, within the gastrointestinal tract, and specifically the mTOR pathway is the one that's most commonly referenced, is the cellular healing and repair pathway. And I can talk more about that in just a minute. But where the advent of intermittent fasting came in is recognizing that reducing your calories by 40% each day is pretty difficult to maintain.
Yeah.
So is fasting for, you know, 3 days at a minimum. That's difficult for most people to do. So intermittent fasting came in as a way to harness the benefits of both of these in a sustainable way.
Amen. Fasting, I mean, I think mentally fasting is hard just to be like, you know, like, say you have to go get a blood test or something.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
People are like, you can't eat and you've never been as hungry in your whole life, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's so interesting. You know, to me, it's funny because when people talk about intermittent fasting, and obviously there's more to it, but I'm like, isn't that just like not eating after you've had dinner and, you know, kind of waiting a little bit longer? I mean, it's amazing how many people eat after they eat dinner. And like, I really can't say that most people are hungry after they eat dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And it's true. I mean, that is basically the way to do it is just, you know, you finish eating dinner around 7 or 8, we'll say, and then you would start eating the next day around 11 or 12. So you just prolong, you know, the time in the morning that you don't eat.
So, and as far as like drinking coffee or, you know, something with like a creamer, is that okay? Like, is there, when you take it to that 11 o'clock hour, say, what is it that you can consume in the meantime?
Yeah, there's two different ways to do it. One is just clear liquids. So black coffee would be fine. Tea would be fine. Water, obviously, those would be fine. Up until that noon hour or, you know, 11 o'clock noon hour, and then you start eating like normal. Another way to do it that can be beneficial metabolically and for people that have issues with, you know, getting low blood sugar if they start to get that hangry feeling, but also because this helps with the production of ketones, is to do what we refer to as a fat-supported fast. So in that case, you can make something like bulletproof coffee.
Yeah.
And have that, 1 to 2 cups of that in the morning. In that fasted state. So So I usually advise my clients to make the bulletproof coffee with just coconut, like full fat canned coconut milk.
Yeah.
Or coconut oil, you know, about a tablespoon or so of coconut milk or like a teaspoon of coconut oil. You can use MCT oil, you know, whatever you prefer, but adding fat to that, to the coffee will help offset the blood sugar issues. And then also the type of fat that's particularly in coconut oil helps, encourages the production of ketones. And ketones are not only energy dense, but they're a very, very clean burning fuel. So it helps, it still helps elicit that healing and repair pathway within the cell.
Hence the keto diet, correct?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now you won't, some people will get into ketosis with intermittent fasting. Usually it takes time, depending on what their diet looked like before, in order to upregulate those fat burning enzymes. But eventually some people will get into ketosis within that fasted state. So you're essentially cycling in and out of ketosis. However, it's not guaranteed that you'll get into ketosis in that.
And why do we want to get to ketosis? Like, what is the benefit for our body?
There's a lot of benefits to ketogenic diet and the state of ketosis. I look at ketogenic diet as a very therapeutic diet in the sense that it's not designed, given the nature of what it is, it's not designed to be followed for a long period of time, like a sustainable diet, but cycling in and out of it would be okay. But ketone bodies, you know, looking at a few different pathways, for one, intermittent fasting and ketogenic diets are one of the fastest ways to lower insulin levels.
Oh.
So if we're looking at like anti-aging, type 2 diabetes, cancer, metabolic syndromes, that is one of the best ways to lower insulin and therefore enhance the sensitivity of the cells to insulin, thereby balancing out blood sugar, et cetera, burning fat for fuel, things along those lines. And then in addition, last thing I'll say about, even though there's tons of different avenues that we could talk about with ketogenic or intermittent fasting. One other thing is ketone bodies, as I mentioned before, are a very clean burning fuel. So they don't produce as much oxidative stress, in other words, within the cell. And the acids associated with ketogenic is they are therapeutic to brain and neurological tissue. So there's a lot of different kind of aspects to keto that makes it therapeutic.
So you said something that I have not heard before, and that is that it's a diet that maybe you should be on for a short amount of time. It's a therapeutic diet. Mm-hmm. I don't know that everyone's gotten that memo. I think people get on the keto train and they stay on it.
Yeah. So yeah.
Why is it just more for like, you know, restorative or repair, or, you know, to maybe jumpstart you to get to another place with your body? Why is it, you know, just a short-term sort of diet that you would go on?
Yeah. Well, when you look at the nature of what being in the state of ketosis is, that answer becomes apparent. So ketogenic, I'm going to make a distinction real quick, because a lot of people say that they're following a ketogenic diet and really they're just eating high fat, low carb.
Okay.
Ketosis.
Like the Atkins diet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If you're not measuring your ketones in either blood or urine and seeing that you're within that nutritional ketosis range of between 1 and 3 millimoles, you don't necessarily know if you're really doing the ketogenic diet. Ketosis is a metabolic state.
Okay.
So that's a really big distinction to make, because a lot of people, or if they say I tried ketogenic and it didn't work, that could be part of it too. It's not necessarily getting into, just because you're eating high fat, low carb doesn't mean you're getting into ketosis. So going back to the answer, to answer that question, if you are truly in ketosis, the state of ketosis, you know, prehistorically speaking, it's a survival state. It's what allows us to go for prolonged periods without food, because the body prefers glucose as fuel. But if we go for a prolonged period of time without food, then we're adapt to start breaking down our fat stores and converting those into ketone bodies, which are a high density energy source. So it'll get us through that famine period.
Wow.
But
I love how you put that. It's the first time I've ever actually understood what it actually was and what it did. So
yeah. So when you look at it from that perspective, you know, evolutionarily speaking, ideally, we were not in famine all the time.
Right.
We were in famine for short periods of time, maybe a couple of days at a time. And then we find food, we eat, and that offsets it. So we don't want to stimulate that response for prolonged periods of time. Up to 3 months within ketosis, I deem okay, largely depending on the person. And in that 3 month period, we may be cycling in and out of it too. So a couple days we're eating a little bit more carbs, you get out of it, come back into it. And then it's also worth noting, you know, the ketogenic diet, I mean, a hallmark of it is eating a lot of fat. So if you're doing that for a long period of time, that also starts to put a lot of stress on the gallbladder.
Yeah.
So So it really is a therapeutic diet in the sense that you can cycle. I intermittent fast on a daily basis and I get into ketosis during that fasting period, but then I come right out of it as soon as I eat.
Yeah.
So that's okay. But staying in ketosis for long periods of time, the body that's not what it's designed to do.
So I was talking to somebody who said, because I tried the keto thing and people will talk to me about what works for them. So this was before. And I would be like, oh, okay. Like that sounds great. And this, that, and the other. And so I tried the keto thing and it made me, and maybe I wasn't doing it right, but I did not feel that great. And then someone was like, you know, if you have an autoimmune condition, it might not be the best thing for you. Is that true? I mean, can the keto diet be for anyone? And I guess the second part of that is that, you know, is it really used for specific imbalances to bring your body back into balance, or can anyone do keto and benefit from it?
Yeah, good question. So the short answer to that is it depends.
Yeah.
as always, right?
Yeah.
So with autoimmune conditions, there's a lot of factors to look at. What do the adrenal glands look like? What does their oxidative stress markers look like? What does their glycemic regulation look like? Gut health, I mean, toxicity load, you know, there's a lot of things to consider with that. So I will say autoimmune thyroid tends to be a harder condition to tolerate ketogenic because the thyroid is so sensitive to metabolic shifts. And it can be harder for them to get into, to upregulate those fat enzymes and get into the state of ketosis. So certain autoimmune conditions are harder. MS, on the other hand, can often greatly benefit because ketogenic is so therapeutic for the nervous system. So different autoimmune conditions may respond differently, and then different sub-factors within that profile, each person's profile, will also influence if they respond well to ketogenic. The other thing that's worth mentioning, too, is it does take... Some people respond differently, but for some people, it can take a transition period of sometimes up to a few weeks to when your body is upregulating those enzymes and becoming more efficient at burning fat for fuel. There's this kind of lag transition period, what we refer to as the low-carb flu, in which case some people feel worse. You know, their energy's lower, they're foggier. And it's that, like I said, it's that transition period. So it's temporary, ideally. And then you should pop out of it once you're able to get into ketosis and you feel, you know, amazing. But that period of time, you know, lasting anywhere from 5 days to 3 weeks can be challenging.
Yeah. So is the body actually detoxifying?
In some ways, yeah, it is. It is. I mean, fat is one of the storage houses for toxins in general. It's one of the safer places to house toxins. So fat can often be toxic in and of itself. So when we start breaking it down to use it for fuel, we're going to release those toxins into the blood, and then we have to flush it out through the liver, kidneys, GI tract, skin, et cetera. And then also from a mitochondrial point of view, mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. It's where energy is created in glycolysis, so when burning glucose, and in particular when burning glucose. So switching to that, to ketosis, which is a much cleaner burning fuel, it's also in some ways, quote, detoxifying for the mitochondria.
Wow. This is so fascinating.
Yeah, it's fun.
It is fun. So speaking of toxicity, that's something that you really help people with, because, I mean, on some level, everyone has toxic overload. And just depends on how much.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, with toxicity, I mean, that's something to always look for. And sometimes it shows up on labs and sometimes not, obviously depending on the labs. But yeah, at this point, in this day and age, everybody has it to some degree. And then you just have to look at.
Do some bodies process toxins? I mean, yes, everything we bring, not everything, but a lot of things that we're, you know, environmentally or, you know, maybe some on some food or whatever, we're bringing in toxins. And does it really just depend on how your body processes it, you know, to depending on your level of overload, or, you know, like say you are high functioning and you bring toxins in and your body's like, okay, and it gets rid of it and you keep moving on and you never get stopped by those. Is that a realistic viewpoint?
Yeah. Yeah. And you can look at that in a few different ways. I look at it as, you know, so let's take genetics, for example. Well, actually I'll describe it more this way. Toxicity, everyone's going to have a different threshold for what they can tolerate. And that is largely deemed by genetics. And I don't mean genetics as in like, this is your set point, you can't change anything. But genetics determine at what point do symptoms and chronic conditions start to manifest. What does that body burden have to be in order for that to manifest? And then genetics also determine how it manifests. So one person gets cancer, another gets diabetes, another gets autoimmune. But the way I look at toxicity also is, and inflammation too for that matter, is, you know, if you think of the inflammatory response or the toxic overload like a bucket. If you keep dumping water into a bucket, eventually it overflows, right? Same concept applies here. So with inflammation, which is the body's immune system's response to injury, if you keep layering different forms of injury, so, you know, chemical injury like environmental toxicity, gut dysbiosis, hormone imbalance, nutrient deficiencies, physical injury, like traumatic brain injury, or you break a bone or sprain an ankle, and then emotional injury, stress, loss, financial concerns, divorce, you know, looking at it from that angle. And then from the toxicity angle, if we have high levels of endogenous toxicity, again, gut microbiome issues, hormone imbalance, oxidative stress, nutrient deficiencies, or exogenous toxicity, like heavy metals or chemicals in our personal care products, non-organic food, you know, environmental pollution. If you look at it, if you keep layering these issues, then eventually we pass a threshold. And at that point is when symptoms and conditions manifest. So my job as a practitioner, when working with people, is to identify through, you know, health history, conducting health history, symptom review, lab values, things along those lines, is to identify what each person's source of injury and toxicity is, prioritize them and eliminate it so the body can go back to healing itself.
Yes.
That's essentially the roadmap.
That's what we're designed to do, right?
We're designed to do. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And sometimes we just need a little help. But otherwise, the body's designed to do that.
Well, that is fascinating. So what are you passionate about helping people do and come into balance about?
Yeah, I'm very passionate. I can answer that in two ways. One, I love working with chronic conditions. I love working with people that don't feel well. They haven't for a long time. They're starting to either reach their rock bottom or I think even worse, accept that this is just how they're going to be. And I love showing them, affirming their hopes that they can feel better, that life can feel better. That is my passion.
I love that. That's amazing.
I love it. And within that, and what I'm starting to go to school for to get my PhD in is I'm also very fascinated by the mind-body connection and the relationship between, specifically between quantum physics and the physical body and health and healing.
I love that.
That's amazing. Totally. So that's what I incorporate a lot within my practice is, yes, of course, you know, I'm a nutritionist also. So of course we're going to work with food. Of course, we're going to look at, you know, lab values and run some panels and look at stool tests and food sensitivities and hormones. Like we're going to look at all of those things. But the state of mind and the person's belief in what we're doing, their belief in their ability to heal, their outlook on life, their support system, their feeling of purpose in life. I mean, all of those things, that trumps anything physical that we can do.
That is what I'm talking about. I love that. And it is super powerful. What you're talking about, just to look at the entire being. And we are so powerful with our minds are so powerful. Our thoughts, our words are so powerful. And how does that affect our body? I mean, that is amazing. I'm so excited for you.
Thanks. Yeah, definitely. It really is. I mean, seeing how now, you know, I spend a lot of time focusing on that part. And if somebody has, you know, anxiety around what we're doing, they're skeptical, they don't believe in it, or they have a lot of emotional trauma, subconscious negative talk. I mean, all of those things, we got to get that on board first. We got to get the mind on board with what we're doing first. And then, you know, and it's always a two-way street too, because sometimes, you know, toxic foods and food sensitivity will definitely affect your brain function and outlook and all of those things. So it's very much a multi-pronged approach, but at some point in the quest for true health, at some point, mind, body, spirit will be addressed. It just depends on what the entry point is.
Amen, Kimsey. I am so excited that we've connected and thank you for sharing your brilliance with all of us. And I'm really excited to have you at the Gut Check Summit and just share more about how people can come into balance and how you can help them to do that. And this quantum piece is huge. So I'm really excited to see where that takes you and all of us.
Thanks. Definitely. I know. I'm so excited to be there too.